Hi, everyone. My name is Michelle from The Table in Uniontown. Thanks for tuning into our podcast this week. We're happy you're here. This is the live recording from this Sunday's sermon. We hope that as you listen, you'll more deeply understand the truth of God's word and how much he loves you. Let's jump in.
The reading this morning is from Ecclesiastes chapter 1, the reading. The words of the teacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem. Absolute futility, says the teacher, absolute futility. Everything is futile. What does a person gain for all his efforts that he labors at under the sun? A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun sets, panting. It hurries back to the place where it rises. Gusting to the south, turning to the north, turning, goes the wind, and the wind returns in its cycles. All the streams flow to the sea, yet the sea is never full. To the place where the streams flow, there they flow again. All things are wearisome, more than anyone can say. The eye is not satisfied by seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. What has been is what will be, and what has been done is what will be done. There is nothing new under the sun. Can one say about anything, "Look, this is new"? It has already existed in the ages before us. There is no remembrance of those who came before, and of those who will come after. There will also be no remembrance by those who follow them. I, the teacher, have been king over Israel and Jerusalem. I applied my mind to examine and explore through wisdom all that is done under heaven. God has given people this miserable task to keep them occupied. I have seen all the things that are done under the sun, and I found everything to be futile, a pursuit of the wind. What is crooked cannot be straightened. What is lacking cannot be counted. I said to myself, "See, I have amassed wisdom far beyond all those who were over Israel before me, and my mind has thoroughly grasped wisdom and knowledge. I applied my mind to know wisdom and knowledge, madness and folly. I learned that this too is a pursuit of the wind. For with much wisdom is much sorrow. As knowledge increases, grief increases." This is the word of the Lord. Please be seated.
You know, I've been really excited about preaching from Ecclesiastes this summer. Really excited. I think the Old Testament is sort of a different preaching muscle. It requires sort of a different preaching muscle. It's a fun challenge. And not for nothing, it's important to teach from the whole counsel of Scripture. And so I think this is going to be great. We're calling this series, Under the Sun, My Meaningless Summer. Because that's just a fun thing to call a sermon series. So anybody familiar with Ecclesiastes, you've read it before. Yeah, good. What are some things that come to mind when you think of Ecclesiastes? You can say them out loud. Sobering, okay? A real bummer. I like that. That's what we're going for. What's that?
Whatever.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter anyway, right?
Someone who's lost perspective.
A time for everything. That's one of those famous sort of lines from that, and it was a song came out of that from a long time ago from someone who I don't know, but I'll... When we get to that, I'm sure I'll mention it. Did you say something?
Reality check.
Yeah. Anything else? What's that?
Vapors.
Yes. Yes. One of our small groups did a study through Ecclesiastes. And so if they weren't depressed enough, if the depression hasn't lingered until now, I want to kind of bring it back a little bit. Funny thing, I told a friend of mine who's a pastor in our denomination. We have this little meeting of pastors of churches in our denomination, sort of on the east side of Ohio, Pennsylvania, and we talk about what's going on in our churches. And I said, "I'm about to preach through Ecclesiastes," and he said, "Oh, I did that 2 summers ago." And big smile on his face, very positive guy. He said it was awesome. He's like, midway through, the church was begging me to stop and to move on. And I told him, "No way, there's too much good stuff here." And I was like, "That's awesome, Jeff." So So hopefully you won't feel the impulse to beg me to stop midway through this series, at least not any more than you do any other week, and you'll see all the good stuff that the author has for us here. So this book, Ecclesiastes, it's in the wisdom literature tradition. It's placed in the Bible as such, along with Proverbs. And one thing, and write this down, make a mental note of this. I have a homework assignment for you. I know you love that. Hey, you're already getting into the depressed mindset, you know. I want you to read this book this week. Read Ecclesiastes this week. I'm going to give you some background today. You can read it this week, and you'll be depressed and ready for the rest of the series. So read Ecclesiastes this week. It's not super long. I think it's super good, and you'll be in a good place for this series. So this book is written by, well, we don't know. We don't know who wrote it. Maybe you saw there in the beginning what Tom read, where it says, "These are the words of the teacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem." Maybe you hear that and you think, well, there's the author, but that's not an author. That's a character. The author wrote this character, this narrator, into our story. The narrator, it's not the author. And so the teacher, as our text calls this person, is not the author. Kohelet is the word here translated as teacher, a word for a few reasons that some actually just use as the title of the book itself. Some people just refer to this book as Kohelet. Robert Alter refers to this book as Kohelet. Some versions of the Bible call Kohelet a preacher. Teacher is a better translation there than preacher. This person's most sort of akin to what we would think of as a philosophy professor, a person who leads Socratic discussion around big ideas. Any of you have to take like a philosophy gen ed course for like your undergrad degree? Yeah? Okay. Did you love it or hate it? Loved it. Hated it. It's one or the other. Nobody's like, it was fine. You were either like, I want this to end so badly, or you're like me, I took an undergrad philosophy course and I said, I'm making that my second major. I have to keep doing this. So that professor, that idea, that class setting, that can kind of bring you into a better understanding of who this character, the teacher, is. And so that's our main character. And if you were to pick up a book about Ecclesiastes, which I'm not going to give you that homework, but if you want to, I dare you, they'll refer to the teacher oftentimes by the proper name, Kohelet. And Kohelet is said to be a son of David, so someone in the line of King David. I heard someone the other day talking about Ecclesiastes saying, rightly, that Kohelet is the feminine version of the word teacher. I am not a Hebrew scholar. I do not think that means that Kohelet is a woman. But either way, that person is a character in the story, just a character. Some people say that this has to be Solomon, right? But this is written about 6 centuries after Solomon. I don't think that that's necessarily it either. But some people read this book thinking that it's Solomon. And you can think that way. It does make sense that this is a Solomon-like character, both like kind of having it all and in the wisdom tradition. So, absolute futility, says the teacher. Absolute futility. Everything is futile. The famous cheery beginning of this book and the words that will sort of guide us through this exploration of the meaning of life. The word here for futile is often translated, as we've used it in the name of our sermon series, as meaningless. Other translations say vanity. The word is the Hebrew word hevel. One commentator translated it absurdity of absurdities. But it means vapor. Somebody said that earlier. It means vapor. It means something that you cannot quite grasp, something that's there and gone. Robert Alter, who you'll hear me quote and talk about and mention a ton in this summer because he's kind of the dude when it comes to the Psalms and wisdom literature. He has his own translation of Ecclesiastes, and he says, "Merest breath," said Kohelet, "merest breath, all is mere breath." This book, it's going to, and it's meant to push all of your assumptions about the meaning of life to their obvious conclusions. And so he says, it's all a vapor, it's all mere breath, it's all there and gone. In this famous photo, not that one. That one. In this famous photo, which I'm sure many of you have seen. Some of you lived through. You see Muhammad Ali standing over. Does anybody know who he's standing over? Sonny Liston. Yes, Sonny Liston. After a first-round knockout during the 1965 World Heavyweight title fight at St. Dominic's Arena in Lewiston, Maine. This was May 25th, 1965. A noticeable feature in this photo is the blue haze that seems to hover over the top of it, kind of towards the right corner you most notice it. And that haze was from, I think I heard somebody say it was from the cigar and cigarette smoke that people were allowed to enjoy indoors, yes, freely indoors in those days. And it was there that night, and it was long gone the next morning. Might have been a smell of it left, I'm sure. There might be a smell of it still today. If the ceiling was white, you would have needed like a shellac primer to block out the stain. That's what I learned in my paint sales days. I knew that would come in handy. But you wouldn't see the smoke. You wouldn't see the smoke. It was there and gone. It was a moment. It was fleeting. Or you have a birthday. Rachel, happy birthday. Yeah, it's her birthday. A cake is presented to you with candles. See, this would have been amazing. If had I known it was her birthday going into this, this would have been a real illustration. I would have been on that Pastors with Props Instagram page. But have a birthday, and a cake is presented to you with candles. And you blow them out. All 37 of them if you were born in the late 1900s like me. And the smoke, it's there for a moment. Just a moment. It doesn't ruin the cake eating because it doesn't last. And the teacher this morning is here to tell us not only does the smoke not last, but the arena will be demolished too. Muhammad Ali and Sonny Liston, they're both dead. The smoke from your birthday candles not only dissipates, but the cake will be consumed and gone. The candles themselves will decompose. Time will come and go. More birthdays. And then one day, no more birthdays. It's as if the professor is slapping us in the face here this morning. Is he not? What does a person gain for all his efforts that he labors under the sun? This phrase here, under the sun, is going to be very important to our understanding of Ecclesiastes. Why? Because that is the perspective for which Ecclesiastes offers a critique. If you're looking for meaning under the sun, he's going to go find out if that exists. Under the sun means outside of God, right? Obviously, we know God is not just like directionally up. I hope we all know, right? Like if you had a big enough staircase, you wouldn't eventually find yourself like at the feet of God, right? But for our purposes here, under the sun means earth. And so you might be here this morning and you might be tempted to say, well, I find my meaning in God. So I'm good. Thanks, but no thanks, Kohelet. I've actually solved your problem already. Don't shortcut the process. Two things about that. First of all, you encounter people every single day that are looking for meaning all over the place apart from God, all over the place under the sun. This book will help you understand how to interact with them. And second of all, our hearts, they are fickle. At our best, as Christians, we find meaning in God and God alone, but at our worst, we look for it all over the place. What do we gain for all our labors here? What are you gaining? What are you achieving? What are you accomplishing, really, under the sun? Keller sorts this question out into three categories. What does one accomplish under the sun? There's three types of people. There's the humanist, the hedonist, and the existentialist. And they all have different ways of answering the question, and maybe you have fallen into one of these categories. The humanist, essentially, is someone who says, well, sure, there's no God to concern ourselves with, obviously, but as human beings, we will make this world a better place. For future generations, we'll do our part to make the world better, and in that way, there is meaning. However, the mark you make on this world will be little remembered. It will be little remembered. Sure, it's a false extreme to say you won't make someone smile, right? You won't make life better for someone. It's a false extreme to say you won't walk along the beach throwing starfish in the water that would otherwise die in the sun, as the old story goes. You know that story, right? Guy walks along the beach, he's throwing starfish in the water, and somebody walks up to him and says, "Why would you do that? Does that even matter?" And he picks up another one, chucks it in. I like to picture him skipping like rocks. And he says, "Mattered to that one," right? Sure, that's a super inspiring tale the teacher tells us in verse 11. There's no remembrance, though, of those who came before and of those who will come after. There will also be no remembrance by those who follow them. Whatever you do under the sun will be forgotten. Won't be remembered. It doesn't mean don't be kind, don't be gracious, don't be charitable. I think that's the opposite of this story, but rather he means don't count on making an impact being the thing that gives meaning to your life. I'm a church planter. I think this church is really wonderful. I do. There are people here whose faith has been changed by this place. There are people whose families, I believe, will be changed because of what the Lord has graciously allowed me and us to be a part of here. Absolutely. And yet one day, there will be no me. One day, the table won't exist anymore. This building will be something else. You won't exist. This building eventually won't exist. Even if your faith sets into motion a legacy of faith for generations and generations, which is great and beautiful, it also might not. No one will remember your pastor. In a few generations, you will be forgotten. You remember your grandparents, yes. But do you remember your great-grandparents? Do you remember your great-grandparents? Most of you, some of you do. Most of you probably do not. And if you're like, I do, boom, take that, preacher man. You don't remember your great-great-grandparents, okay? So my great-grandfather's name was Agostino Nigro, and he went by Gust. What a cool guy. And he, I assume, saw the opportunity to bring his family to America from his small village in Italy. And it was he saw there was a great opportunity, and so he did it. And my grandparents met here, and they had a great life together. And I've had a great life. And I've never met Agostino Gust Nigro. And my grandparents, they very, very rarely talked about him. My mom never talks about him, basically. This is the nature of life. There is no remembrance of those who came before. You want to make a difference? That's great. You want to do good? You should. You should do good. But to derive your meaning from it, the teacher warns you that it's going to be largely forgotten under the sun. What about the hedonist, right? That's the pleasure seeker. The one who says, you find that life has meaning in as much that you can pack it full of pleasure. Verse 8, all things are wearisome more than anyone can say. The eye is not satisfied by seeing or the ear filled with hearing. Don't you see? You can find pleasure. You can smoke. You can drink. You can have sex. You can buy things. You can eat good food. You can watch baseball. You can travel. You can do whatever your heart desires. But the truth is, all things are wearisome. I mentioned baseball. Not just because it's my nature to do so, because I love it, but someone on one of my favorite podcasts said once, they're having a conversation, that the playoffs in baseball exist to figure out who the best team is. And a host on that show came out with this quote, sounding like a baseball Colette himself. The point of this entire enterprise is to entertain us with baseball games. The point is not to decide who is the best team. The illusion that is what we're doing has long been a powerful draw to sports, but it is ultimately not the point. There is no scenario where the universe will care or remember who the best team was out of this collection of collections. It only matters in as much as we create this illusion that it matters. If you lose even the illusion, then it becomes problematic. But the point is not to have the illusion. The point is to entertain people and make them forget that we are all dying right in front of each other. That this is just this horrible, rotten slog to rigor mortis. that we are going to lose everybody we know, that we are going to lose everything we have, and the only way to distract ourselves is by separating our day into distractions. You like that? Pleasure is the illusion. It's the distraction that gets us to forget that it's all hevel under the sun, that it's all a vapor, that none of it will last. This clip I'm about to show, it really gets to the heart of it. It's Louis C.K. on Conan O'Brien about 10 years or more ago. Louis C.K., of course, has had some controversy surrounding him, and me showing a video of anyone isn't an endorsement of anyone or anything. So any opinions you have about that, just take this video for what it is.
Because, you know, underneath everything in your life, there's that thing, that empty, forever empty. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I know what you're talking about.
Knowledge that it's all for nothing and you're alone. You know, it's down there. And sometimes when things clear away, you're not watching it, you're in your car, and you start going, oh, no, here it comes, that I'm alone, like it starts to visit on you. You know, just the sadness.
Yes.
Life is tremendously sad.
He's comedically describing how underneath it all, there's a sense of lonely sadness that we try to distract ourselves away from. And the laugh track plays even then, doesn't it? The right music under what he's saying could have made you feel some deeply distressing stuff, couldn't it? And instead we put a laugh track because we don't want to stare deeply into the abyss, lest we find it staring back into us. If pleasure is the way you're going to find meaning in life, unfortunately, you're going to have to reckon with what's true, and that's that life under the sun is a vapor, and that there's a melancholy to it, that when you stop distracting yourself for long enough, you wonder if there's any meaning at all, if it matters at all, that everyone you know will die one day, that under the sun, that is a great tragedy, that all things are wearisome. The more you see, the more you hear, the more you experience, it actually compounds the problem. Because if you at least have so much more to experience, then you might be able to entertain the idea that there's some new experience out there that you haven't had yet that will give your life meaning. You just haven't found it yet. But the more you have, the more you've seen, the more you've done, the more you've heard, the more you've learned, the more nauseated or sick you become, seeing that none of it under the sun can provide real, lasting meaning. It's a vapor. It's a vapor. It's the smoke from your birthday candles. In verse 14, the teacher says, I have seen all things that are done under the sun. I have found everything to be futile, a pursuit of the wind. The actual phrase here means something more like it's a herding of the wind. Can you imagine trying to herd wind? We use herding cats to describe an impossible task. How much more impossible is herding the wind? You can't do it. It's an impossibility. It slips through your fingers. That's everything under the sun, including the pursuit of pleasure. The existentialist would say something like, it is all in fact meaningless. I agree with you, teacher. It's senseless. And yet we defy it courageously with integrity. We live the good life, a good life, in spite of the meaninglessness of life. But in a meaningless existence, in a meaningless world, there is no good life. There is no good life. There's no moral life. There's no such thing as integrity. These are constructs under the sun without regard to heaven, without regard to God. You want to pursue human rights as someone who is just independently virtuous under the sun? There's no such thing. There's no such thing as human rights. Science doesn't tell you that human beings have intrinsic value. You don't get that under the sun. You get that from the eternal. Under the sun, you came to be by meaningless chance, didn't you? And under the sun, you will die one day, and you will become irrelevant over time as your final breath is your final moment of consciousness. And then, over time, you just slip into becoming more and more forgotten and irrelevant. They may remember your moment standing over Sonny Liston 50 years later. They will not remember it 500 years later. If your origin and your end are meaningless, everything in the middle is too, as Keller puts it. And that's what the author of our reading this morning implies. I don't remember if it was Keller or Marty Solomon or Tim Mackey, to be honest. Done a lot of reading and listening about Ecclesiastes, just really feeding my soul with uplifting content. Because despite how depressing this has been so far, I think it's fascinating. But whoever it was, I don't remember who, they said that in John 1, the word for word is the logos. You know this, the logos. It means word. It's translated as word, but it can also mean or has the implication of reason. The reason. In the beginning was the reason. Jesus is the reason we've searched for. He's the reason. Life is meaningless under the sun until you insert the reason. See, everything is either one of two things. Everything is either meaningless or everything is meaningful. It's either meaningless or it's drenched in meaning. Those are the only two options. It's one side of the spectrum or the other. It either means something or it means nothing. Under the sun, apart from God, without eternity in mind, everything means nothing. Everything is meaningless. With God, everything matters. Everything is soaked in meaning. It all counts. The joys of life, they matter. Christians will experience joy eternally. Joy is lasting. You see? It matters so much that one day it gets amplified by God. It's not meaningless, it's meaningful. And the sorrows, they matter. They matter so much that they're being wiped away and fixed. They will never be experienced again. They're being made right. Your suffering matters so much that God wants to eradicate it one day. It's not meaningless, it's meaningful. It matters. Everything matters with eternity in mind. If someone were reading the Bible for the first time, we would never send them to Ecclesiastes first, would we? We never would do that. We'd never send them to Ecclesiastes first. This is like the last book we would give them. We'd send them to like John, Acts, Romans, maybe throw Genesis in there if you're wondering how we all got here, right? And then some other stuff. And then at the end, maybe it would be like Ecclesiastes, Song of Songs, Revelation, Leviticus, right? Like, let's not freak people out with the goth book of the Bible here. Maybe we can put it before like the love poetry, because you read that and you're kind of like, how'd that get here? And then the apocalypse, that's like a lot, too much to understand. And then the boring one last, right? That's kind of how we would rank the last books we'd have you read. But what if the beginning of their journey of reading the Bible, we said, okay, you're coming into this Bible reading with some skepticism. I can see that. Well, let's examine the whole premise. As Socrates said, the unexamined life is not worth living. So let's examine it. Let's not get away from it. Let's not distract, right? Let's not play the laugh track underneath it to forget about the gravity of it all. Under the sun, without eternity, without God, without a future, without a creator, it's all a vapor. You know it. Colette knows that you know it. You ever say the days are long, but the years are short? It's an experience that is amplified when you have children growing up at a speed you wish you could slow down. It's like saying the days feel substantial. But as I look back at it, it's all hevel. As I look back at it, it was gone so fast. This past year was a mist. My son is 4. His life has been a fog that has blown over in a lot of ways. The days, well, sometimes they're like, man, when is bedtime? Because this day has been like 90 hours long. Sometimes. But then the weekends and we're like, church already? Where did the past 6 days go? Where did the last year go? Maybe like me, you ask yourself, where did my 20s go? And one day, if we're lucky, we'll lay in a bed and we'll look down at wrinkled hands that we barely recognize from the same ones of our youth, and we'll say, where did my life go? And I think Colette is saying, under the sun, that should scare the crap out of you. If all of this is meaningless, that should scare you to death. If you read this book first, it would give you such a proper footing for the undertaking of learning about Jesus. Ecclesiastes puts you in the mindset of the life apart from God. If all we had what was under the sun, which is the reality for the secular person, how should we see that life? Well-meaning people might say, well, my meaning comes from God. But in the name of tolerance, if you don't believe in God, that's okay too. You can find meaning somewhere else. Qoheleth says, nonsense. Nonsense. C.S. Lewis once said, God cannot give us happiness and peace apart from himself because it is not there. There is no such thing. And I think he would be fine with me assuming that meaning would also fit the bill here. God does not give us meaning apart from himself because it does not exist. We do not find meaning apart from God. We only find the illusion of meaning apart from God. We find the distraction. We get married and have kids and start businesses and work hard and buy stuff and party and make friends, and we call it a meaningful life. And I belabor the point only to really drive home that even the good things are meaningless without eternity. If under the sun all there is are our wife and kids, and they're not image bearers of anything, they will die. And the job will go to the next guy when you can't do it anymore. The friends you have will die. The stuff you bought will rot. The Cadillac will stop running. The clothes will wear out. The perfect skin will wrinkle. You will die. It's all very bleak. If it feels very bleak, it should. It's all very bleak. Human beings, they're meaning makers. We are meaning makers. And we try to make meaning apart from God. But when we do it, we are hurting wind. And so long as the laugh track plays underneath and the distractions keep coming, thank you Netflix, thank you iPhone, we will be able to ignore the cracks in the veneer of a meaningful, or in the veneer of a meaningful, godless existence. But every once in a while, someone dies, or someone leaves us, or we have a health scare, and we see for a moment how much of a phantom life really is, how quickly it can slip through our fingers, how it can now and ultimately will dissipate. If we come to peace with that, or really if we come to a place of unrest and look for something that won't do that, then and only then can we come to a life where everything isn't meaningless but meaningful. And that, I believe, is the goal of Qoheleth, and that is why this book is in the Bible, I think. So I hope for 8 weeks or so we are going to explore these themes. We are hopefully going to become grounded in the meaninglessness of life apart from Jesus Christ. And I hope that drives us to want to tell people about Jesus, the one who ultimately gives everything meaning. The one who isn't a vapor, but who is an ultimate, the ultimate reality. The one who is the most real thing that we can reach for. And hopefully, we become convicted and conversant in this idea so that we can, when the Spirit leads, gently but with great conviction, share the meaninglessness of life under the sun and the real life that only comes from a heart set on eternity with Christ.
Thanks so much for listening to our Sunday service. If you're interested in joining us in the future, you can find us at 17766 Cleveland Avenue Northwest on Sunday mornings at 10. Additionally, we host a meal every first and third Sunday after service in order to fellowship with one another. Visit aseatforyou.org for more information. We hope you'll join us next week. Go in peace.